Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Betfair's Weighed In podcast. We are recording a little bit later than usual on a Monday afternoon, but at Brendan Duke's favourite record time of 1:30, because it means that he's across absolutely everything before the show kicks off. And we have got loads to be across because, of course, we're at that time of the year. We've got the jumps racing just about wrapping up. We've got so much to look forward to on the flat, internationally as well. Guineas week, Punterstown week, Kentucky Derby week. Kevin Blake, what a time to be alive, as you would say.
What a time to be alive. Yeah, echo that. Entirely fantastic time of year. Loads to get stuck into, loads to look forward to if we want to get go that far down the bunny hole. But yeah, we've plenty to look back on, that's for sure.
Absolutely, we really do. Brendan, am I right in suggesting to the listeners and viewers that you're going to be across everything, ready for the deep dive today?
Well, yeah, I mean, hopefully. I'm conscious of the fact that my days on this pod are numbered, because I think we all know why people tune in, Vanessa, and that is for my paddock picks. And I just haven't been racing enough. So my USP has disappeared completely. Luckily, the boy Blake has picked up the slack and he's been going racing morning, noon and night. But it's a disgraceful performance for me. Life issues have got in the way and I'm no longer the paddock judge I once was.
Yeah, but that's because you've stepped into the world of employment, Brendan,
yeah,
which, you know, is a shocking world to find yourself in. I think you can agree.
Completely shocked. That's no good to the listeners. That's no good to the listeners who are deserting in their droves because I'll be there. Oh, well, it looked all right in the telly. What's the telly themselves?
I, on the other hand, have been racing a lot, everyone. I was at Newcastle, I was at Bath, but Kevin Blake takes the mantle because he had
how many hundreds of miles are there between Bath and Newcastle? Jesus.
A lot of hundreds of miles, let me tell you. Back-to-back weekend, working weekend on course. But Kevin, you get all the glamorous gigs. I saw you sauntering around on the French feed in Longchamp, just living your best life, cruising around. It's all right for some, isn't it?
Yeah, I've had a mighty week now. I started off at Goran Park, and then I went to Cork, and then I was in Navan, and then we went to Longchamp. Yeah, so you've been a busy week.
Love it, love it. Right, shall we kick on, guys, before we get a bollocking early on in the show for time wasting? Let's start with all things Willie Mullins, because, of course, people will be relatively over this by now, but on Saturday, big celebration, because Willie Mullins was crowned the British champion trainer, and that to go alongside his Irish champion trainer title he'll pick up this week at the end of Punchestown. Willie Mullins just dominating left, right and centre. And of course, it was only right that he had a winner on the day as well, a couple of winners on the day as well at Sandown. And Kev, I know you weren't there. None of us were there, but watching it on the telly, as Brendan rightly points out, I tell you, the one really noticeable thing I thought was like the celebration. I was worried that people would be on a downer about it over here in the UK, because, of course, he's come over here and robbed it from Dan Skelton and Paul Nicholls. But actually, it didn't feel like a bit of that. It felt like a genuine celebration of something that is pretty extraordinary from a man who is genuinely extraordinary.
Yeah, sure. Look, first time it's been done in 70 years. The last fella to do it happened to be a genius. So, you know, it was something special. It was something different. The fact that it was happening lifted up that whole meeting at Sandown, not just in terms of significance, excitement, but horsepower as well. Because Willie obviously fired some big bullets in that direction, a few that hit their target. So it was great. And I think it's, you know, the chat afterwards, you know, there'll be a lot of speculation as to whether Willie will line up some big guns in the first half of next season with a view to repeating. You know, they do appreciate their history and their milestones, do the clan Mullins. And they did make the point themselves that when Vincent did it, he did it 2 years in a row. So they might well be inclined to have a crack. And if they do, and I don't think they have to do anything madly different to give it a real good go. You know, it's just in terms of just having cracks at all the big races, the big grade ones, the valuable handicaps, which is readily achievable for them given the horsepower. So that prospect will be keeping poor old Nicholls and poor old Skelton awake at night, I'd imagine. But look, it'll enhance the British National Hunt season. And Lord knows it needs a bit of enhancing, as we know. Outside of the festival meetings, the Saturdays were a little bit low-key this year. So if something like that happened, it would only be to the greater good. For all that, it would result in plenty of pounds sterling leaving the country.
Mm. It will be fascinating, that angle about next season, because of course this year, this dream only really came alive, Brendan, for Willie because of the national win. You can't rely on winning a national every year. So, no. You know, you'd want to be making more inroads ahead of a national if you were to do it back to back years. But it is, as Kevin rightly points out, you know, we see with Willie, you know, he's a level guy. He's won 100, literally, Cheltenham Festival races, so many grade ones. And it's rare you see what, you know, is above normal emotion from him. But with this particular day, I A, felt like he was really enjoying himself, but B, I think it's the angle Kevin's touched upon, the history, the Vincent O'Brien factor, an Irish god in his eyes and everyone's eyes over there, that made this the big one for Willie. That was my impression anyway. Do you concur?
I would say so, absolutely, keeping rarefied company. But I do think the angle about getting a taste for it, I think that's possibility. And the other possibility is, as we've talked before about these premier race days and the prize money that's open to Irish trainers in the UK. We've seen Gavin Cromwell and Emmett Mullins take advantage of it. But I'd say Willie might be having a look at this and go, oh, it's fairly straightforward getting those horses over to England, giving my race planner something to do. And I suspect that because of those two factors, he will have a go at it next season. And I mean, to give him his credit this season, obviously a trainer being so dominant, it's great for him. It's a massive achievement, but it's maybe not great for the game. But when I do look back over the season, and it started early, he had Impere Pass out against Tiupu. He was happy enough to run Impere Pass against Stateman. He was going to send out Fabiolo for the Clarence House, his novices butting heads at the DRF, Alaho and the King George, Gallop and Deschamps taking on Fast or Slow in an Irish Gold Cup. I mean, he did make for some interesting racing over the season. Often he had to run his own horses against one another. I get that, but he was happy to do it. So what could have been a season where he was completely dominant and he sort of took away from these major pre-Cheltenham prizes, I don't think you could accuse him of that, actually. So kudos to Willie for that.
And I suppose there's an irony now of this happening in the season where, you know, a number of high-profile British trainers were, you know, going out of their way to emphasise how difficult it is to cross the Irish Sea and go to challenge for big races. The famous, of course, away games quote from Nicky, etc. And he goes and does that. And no, not just him. You know, Gavin Cromwell had an unbelievable year going across the water. Continued at Haydock the other day. You know, he had a heap of winners at Cheltenham. Anthony McCann with a double at Wolverhampton the other night, which was super. And yeah, look, I know we take the... We take it, I know we all took it with a bit of a pinch what the lad said about it, but it isn't straightforward going over Mac, and for it to be made look so easy by some of these guys is a testament to how good they are, you know, because it isn't straightforward, you know, post-Brexit and everything else has only made it and logistically more challenging. So I wouldn't be underestimating the scale of what happened either, you know.
Now, Brendan, on Saturday we also saw the boy Cobden, Crown champion jockey. Does that mean that his title changes on this pod now?
Well, no, he'd always be the boy Cobden to me, and of course his cheeky winning smile only endears him further and gives that nickname greater validity. I think, yeah, just superb. I was delighted for him. Obviously, we talked about this actually. After timing now, but I'm off to Nace today and I'm going to pick up some money from a winning wager I had on him to be champion jockey. Not my own work, it should be said. A shout out to Dan Barber, because he told us earlier, yeah, I think Cobden might be having a go at the jockey's title this year. And I said, first of all, I didn't think he'd be interested, because as we know, he's a son of the soil. You've talked about his country pursuits and his cattle. It's only so many hours in the day for the young fella. And then I didn't think Nichols would let him do it, because he'd say, I don't want you riding these yaks around these courses that you haven't schooled or what have you. But Nichols seemed to really get on board with it. They had a target. I remember Barry telling us that they wanted 40 winners by that October meeting in Chepstow, which they achieved. Now, he probably had a little bit of luck in terms of Bowen's knee. Bowen was out for about 5 weeks, was he? And that was probably ultimately decided. But again, this Cobden's just so good at getting horses to jump that he doesn't take many falls. I've no actual empirical evidence for that, but I'd suggest that his fall percentage would be lower than anyone else because he's just a master of presenting horses at obstacles. So I was delighted for him. I suspect it will be the only time he does it because, again, his other interests will get in the way. But he had a target. He achieved it. He's now champion jockey. He was always the best in my eyes, but now everyone else can see it.
Youngest champion jockey since AP McCoy?
I think that's right.
I believe that's correct. Yeah.
Side note, now both those topics we've discussed so far, trainer championship, jockey championship, being interesting battles, of course, to follow and have provided a great kind of narrative and a bit of interest towards the back end of the season. And battles are not over yet. Obviously, Irish trainer championship very much sewn up, but not the jockey championship, Kev. And it's going to be a lovely little thread, isn't it, through Punchestown, just to wrap up the week. Jack Kennedy, I think he's 7 ahead of Paul Townend's, Brendan nodding away. So that's right still.
Yeah.
Really interesting this because, of course, we know Paul's going to have a huge week, specifically towards the back end, odds on shots, left, right and centre. But a 7-winner lead, Kev, is no small matter. And Jack's surely going to ride a few winners. I'm with Jack. I'm Team Jack here. If I was to have a bet, I'm Team Jack. Am I right, Kev?
Oh, it's nicely poised. It's the kind of cushion you'd want him to have if you're in that camp, because we know, look, historically, Punchestown isn't hot for Elliot and it's red hot for Mullins. And look, just because it's red hot for Mullins, it doesn't mean Paul will be on all of them, as we've seen in recent weeks. He has an excellent record in getting it right, but it doesn't happen all the time. And as we know, at Punchestown, like any of these kind of back-end national meetings, you know, funny things can happen form-wise, and Willie might still be winning, but not with the number one. So, yeah, look, hopefully Jack bursts out of the stalls and makes the real contest. You know, these championships, you know, they don't do it for everyone, but I love a championship battle. You know, like, geez, thinking back to when Gordon made a real go of it with Willie those couple of seasons, like, that was unbelievable drama.
That was great. I love
so hopefully this pans out similarly. Look, two top lads, two model professionals. And look, you wish them both the best of luck and may the best man win at the end of the week.
Indeed, Vanessa, respect to you as an odds compiler, because I'm just thinking, I don't actually know what the betting is on this, but Townend had 11 winners at Punchestown last year, and he's to make up 7. It probably isn't too far off an even money coup, this, just off the top of my head, is it?
Let's see. Can I find
Go
one?
Go on, Kev. Him? Kev can bring that up. Look, 11 was at the high end of what he's got, Punchestown winners, right? So that is probably an above average year.
True, he might take more outside rides and handicaps than he might necessarily do, because he's been, last couple of years in particular, he's been quite picky. Whereas, you know, that'll surely go out the window now. And
this is a fascinating betting heat. There's so much to factor in. Yeah, great.
Don't we just love the game?
If only I could find the prizes.
Honestly, I love this game. Okay, we've just got the betting in. Confirmed 4-5, 10-11. Is what we've been told in the betting heat. 4-5, Jack Kennedy. 10-11, Paul Townend. Kevin's rubbing his chin, like that interests him a little bit.
Yeah, this is competitive, isn't it?
Really?
Yeah, if I had to have a bet, and it's a horrible bet to have, but I think if you're having a bet, I think it has to be Jack Kennedy.
It'll be
a horrible experience, because you know how much ammo Paul Townend's going to have, and there's going to be lots of upset along the way. You might get there in the end, but it's going to be like back in 0-0 in a football match. You know, it's just not a fun watch, is it?
Okay. Well, we will be following that with interest throughout the course of this coming week. But let's look back at the last 7 days of horse racing action on the track, guys, because we've had some big names make their reappearances. And some decent performances. We're going to kick off on the flat with Kyprios, Kev, who made his reappearance at extremely short odds in the Vintage Crop Stakes. And it was basically like a piece of work. Obviously, we know that last autumn really didn't happen for him, didn't click for him. But was this a reappearance run that would give you hope that he's going to bounce back to that really strong form of 2022, wasn't it? I had to think there for a second.
Yeah, like one of the great staying campaigns there of recent years. In 2022, last year went wrong. All indications are like the season has gone really well. Aidan seems very happy, you know, time honoured preparation for the Gold Cup at Royal Ascot now from here on to Leopardstown in a few weeks and then on to Ascot. And as a starting point, this was lovely. Like it what didn't test him in that, like, you know, it was a bit, you know, a mile six piece of work, and they didn't go all that hard. He was in the back seat all the way, good and powerful late on. Like the main takeaway for me was Ryan Moore afterwards. Like he was, we know Ryan, he keeps the cards close to his chest, etc. Doesn't stray too far from the middle line, but he did seem particularly happy now, particularly happy, which you'd have to be delighted with. I mean, he looked great. He didn't look like he was carrying a whole heap of condition now, but he was having a good blow as he made his way back in. And yeah, look, you'd be really happy. And can he regain his place at top of the staying division? I'd say it's looking likely at this stage. I don't think he's going to meet Tower of London anytime soon, who's a slightly different type. But yeah, he's in pole position for the Gold Cup now. And I don't think there'll be anything turning up in the Savabeg to worry him. So he's likely to go there off two easy wins and probably be a little bit shorter than he is right now.
He's an extremely likable horse, Kyprios. A dude, you know, he's just a very likable individual. I know he's obviously had the setback he had, but just the way he goes about it and his class as well, and just the way he carries himself, he's just really likable. I was reminded of that in the Vintage Crop. Go on, Brendan.
Sorry to interrupt, but I wasn't expecting that kind of a performance from him, though, because he's a horse who hits flat spots. And I thought of Remindman 6 in a steadily run race, because the betting was incredible for this. The horse must be working the house down. He was 2-5 in the morning. He's into 1-5 by the time the betting opened on course. And he went off 2-13, a hard 1.18 on the machine. It was just like, now, I mean, he was entitled to win. I take that the second is a 97 rated filly that he was only given a pound to. But I would have thought that at least the layers would have had a chance to get out and run him, but not a chance. He just travelled all over them. I thought this was nearly a revelation of a performance. It wasn't the performance I was expecting, certainly. I mean, it was wildly impressive, I thought.
And wouldn't you have enjoyed it if you were unemployed and there? That would be much nicer. But anyway, Brendan, on we go. Give me mentions. Give me the Beat Boys back in a winner's enclosure since he cost all that money at that Royal Ascot sale. What will have been just over a year ago now. And he was back winning at Navan when the listed 6 furlongs. So it's been cut for the Commonwealth Cup. That's his race, isn't it? Back to Royal Ascot. They go for another bite of the cherry.
Ran big at the meeting last year. I thought this was a decent performance, particularly given it took him a couple of furlongs to drop the bridle. Now, I mean, the second who we only just beat, admittedly conceding weight, was fourth in a maiden on his previous start. So I don't think it's form that will have the connections of Van Dijk quaking in their boots. But he probably will step up on it in Royal Ascot, but he'll certainly have to.
Now we're bouncing around a little bit, but let's do cover a bit of Sandown just the way it is on our running order. So we'll jump over to the jumps, please, Kev. John Bon obviously beat El Fabiolo in the celebration chase. Big day for Nicky Henderson, and he's had a terrible roller coaster of a weekend because, of course, highs of a couple of winners at Sandown on Saturday, then obviously prepping a team for Punchestown to leave on Monday, and then the news comes through on Sunday that poor Shishkin, multiple Grade 1 winner, was set to be on the boat to Punchestown as well, got cast in his stable and sustained an injury that sadly turned out to be a fatal injury, a fractured leg that he obviously couldn't recover from. Just horrendous news, Kev. And, you know, I mean, off the back of the Highfield Princess news as well, not a dissimilar incident, cast in a box, etc. Your heart just goes out to the connections of these horses. And, you know, Shishkin really is a horse that people had really latched onto as a character. And he sort of got that across in the way in which he raced. Not all good all the time, but he really was loved by so many. And of course, those closest to him.
Yeah, this is desperate news, wasn't it? Like he's probably been one of, if not the most popular jumps horse in the UK for a number of years now. And we know Nicky's connection with him. We know how much Nicky cares. Everyone cares. But, you know, Nicky, you know, he wears his emotions on his sleeve. And this horse brought them on some journey. You know, so many big days, so many days that you remember. That day at Ascot was just unbelievable when he beat an Ergamine despite jumping out to his left. And it was just you know, there was such a vibe that day. Like that was one of the great days, that one. And look, he's had plenty of difficulty since then, difficult physical things going on, and he kept getting them back and kept getting them winning. And you know, had that the drama and the King George this year. Like, oh, it's been such a roller coaster, and just a horse that you would have really wanted now to go out on the track and keep doing his thing, and then live a long and happy retirement, being looked after by the people closest to him. So for a 10 like this, it is pretty, is shocking. You know, you just don't expect that, and it just underlines how fragile these horses are. You know, safe and sound in a stable, you're thinking, and he gets cast and breaks a leg. You know, that's just desperate stuff. So, you know, sincere commiserations and condolences with all involved. And you can see from the outpouring on social media that it hit plenty of unconnected people only connected to him, you know, through their fandom and appreciation of the horse. So, look, desperate stuff. Tough game, though. Tough game when things like this happen.
I hate to use social media as a gauge for anything about how bad or well-received anything is, because I just don't think it's a reflection. But in this instance, the outpouring, as you say, Kev, it really hit me how liked and appreciated and loved this horse was by the public because of his quirks. You know, we talk about it on the show all the time. It's the character that you have to get out of these horses and across the TV screens and into the media that then really gets under people's skins as racing fans. And that's what Shishkin did, I think, for a lot of people. And it really has showcased how loved and appreciated he was. And it's a bitter blow for the team. And of course, as I referenced earlier, it was off the back of such a high with John Bonn doing his thing in the celebration chase, Brendan, which, you know, was that seemed to mean a huge amount to everyone, not only Nicky, but JP as well. And Nicky doing that interview afterwards, expressing that every time JP calls, he asks how John Bonn is. It sounds like John Bonn sits very high in JP's sort of eyes and appreciation scale. And for him to get the better of El Fabiolo here, do it again at Sandown, big day, big win for him, and off the back of Aintree, of course.
Yeah, this is what he does. He just wins, doesn't he? As I mentioned before, except for Constitution Hill and El Fab and Elixir de Nuts. But we're forgetting about that Clarence Hess. Although maybe we shouldn't completely forget about it. Is it possible that he's just not quite as effective at Cheltenham as elsewhere? That is a possibility. But basically, the horse is a winning machine. And you could definitely see him winning a champion chase, particularly El Fabiolo. Now that's twice he's fluffed his lines. Obviously, race-ending mistake in Cheltenham, and he jumped appallingly here. Did remarkably well to get within three lengths of John Bond, given how badly he jumped. But John Bond's just such a likable horse. He turns up for work all the time. I can understand it with JP as well. He spent a lot of money on him, and he was particularly fiery early on in his career. And you wondered, was he going to stand a lot of racing? But not a bit of it. He's relaxed. He loves his work. He's a sound jumper. And basically, you have to run off your face to beat him. Just one of the most likable horses in training. Good job. The only thing I was there, everyone was there. Oh, didn't Nicky do the right thing with himself and Sergino at Cheltenham? I mean, did he? Or did he leave a champion chase and a triumph further behind? That's just something to consider. You know, that wasn't necessarily the right thing to do to take them out of Cheltenham, but they got a great payoff in Aintree and Sandown, so fair enough.
Yeah, and just while we're on it, it's a slight sidetrack, Vanessa.
Yeah.
The only horses to ever beat John Bonn, Constitution Hill, El Fabiolo, and Elixir de Nuts. And geez, that was a tough one. Now Elixir de Nuts as well. To lose him as well. You know, another, you know, not as high class a horse as John Bonn, obviously, but as Shishkin, but he was a smashing horse, wasn't he? And again, like he fell behind John Bonn and later couldn't recover from his injuries, and that was another tough one because he feels like he's been there forever, hasn't he? You know, lovely grey, knocking around in all those big races. That'll be his defining day now, beating John Bonn.
Yeah.
At Cheltenham, and again, just tough on his connections there. Terry Warner, his our team, tough stuff again. I tell you, it's not for widows and orphans. This game, is it? As the saying goes, it's tough stuff at times.
It's a roller coaster ride, left just like every day, really, but specifically this weekend, it feels for sure. Let's roll on. I should just mention prices for the Champion Chase next year. Jonbon is 3-1 from fives, and El Fabiolo pushed out from 9-4 to 5-1. Obviously, a second time he's sort of fluffed his line, somewhat different situation this time around, but intriguing to see what next for him. Henson also had fantastic lady win at the Oaksy Chase. She's been cut to 20-1. Sorry, not cut. First show 20-1 for the Mare's Chase. But let's move on to a little bit more flat action, guys, because there's plenty to get through here. Azealia Kev has been cut for the Oaks to 14-1 from 25s, having won the Southpool Stakes at Navan. A little bit unexpected for the Weld team, and because obviously a show can't go by without me mentioning it. Beating a Calyx filly in second. Disappointing.
Yeah, nice filly this. Like Dermot Wells' team are turning the corner now. Like it's not unusual for them to be a little bit slow to hit full gear, and it started happening in recent days. And I was quite impressed with this filly. Like she has like a real good pedigree. She's by Dubawi. She's out of a mare that that Dermot trained. Was very talented. Like, and you know, she won a bunch of Group Threes. She was very good. Like she finished off her career, finished the third out in Hong Kong in the Hong Kong Vaz. You know, she was a very talented mare. And this lady's well able now because she was dropped in. She was given a no pressure type of ride. Had a bit to do turning in. She was following Purple Lily, and she went and got her inside the final furlong and was on top of her at the line. Billy Lee lost an iron close home and Purple Lily, I don't think it mattered. And look at with her pedigree, like her dam stayed all of a mile and a half. She's by Dubawi. You know, I'd be pretty confident she will get an Oaks trip. And yeah, it'd be fascinating to see what they do now, because this was a real nice start back, a real big step up in terms of form. You know, the form of her maiden that she won at Cork last season was only, you know, average. But this was much more like it now, and stamped herself as a classic prospect. So yeah, I'm sure all involved will be cock-a-hoop with her.
Did you see her before the race, Kevin?
I didn't get a great look at her now, Juki. Unfortunately, I was under a bit of pressure at the time.
As ascertained already, Brendan, that is actually your job for this show.
It is. No, it was just interesting. I just remember she was the talk of Leopardstown before making her debut last year. I mean, that Cork maiden did work out pretty well, I thought, for a maiden. I just thought, now I know Purple Lily completely dominated the belly for this race, but she didn't seem to be particularly fancied. It was a good performance, if there's more improvement to come.
When you say she was the talk of Leopardstown, you mean in the sense of she was so fancied, or you mean in the sense that she looked great?
No, in terms of she was so fancy. She drifted on the show, actually. She was punted all morning, and then she drifted back out on the show. They came for one of Aidan's that actually won the race ultimately. I can't remember.
Content, who's a good filly. Yeah.
Who's a good filly. So, no, she's just obviously well regarded, and I like Kevin, was impressed.
Okay, so we shouldn't. I looked at the price she went off and I was like, oh, maybe this was a bit of a surprise, but not a bit of it to the experts on this show. Quick line, Kev, whilst we're on the topic of Oaks fillies. Daniela up at Weatherby for Team Gosden won the fillies novice up there over the 10 furlongs. Bit of a bigger prize for the Oaks, but she's in there. Did you want to give her a mention?
Yeah, look, she's moving the right way, isn't she? Like, she, you know, Shape Her Promise only started right at the back end of last year, made a good comeback at Chelmsford, but she lifted herself up here, like, won by a mile, 12 lengths or so. Big pedigree out of a dam that's had like
how
five
big,
or six.
Kev? Like a Dan Barber size, or like a
one and a half Dans, I'd say.
One and a half Dans, wow.
And a mare's thrown like five stakes horses, including Courage Mon Ami. Lions Pride as well. So didn't lick it off the stones, as they say, by Cracksman. Going to stay the Oaks trip, I'd say. And yeah, really interesting for sure.
Okay, so that's the Oaks scene looked at. Quick mention for the Derby scene whilst we're on the classic sort of agenda, Brendan, because we saw Arabian Crown that's been cut in half for the Derby from 12-1 to 6-1 after winning the classic trial at Sandown in extraordinary kind of fuss-free fashion, right?
Yeah, that's it. When you're on a horse with proven stamina, use the stamina, right? Jump him out in front. He's a real grinder. Very straightforward ride. Doesn't pull or anything, and just put them to the sword. Really likable horse. Looks certain to improve for a step up to a mile and a half. Legit Derby contender. I would just have half a concern that an ease in the ground might be his optimum conditions.
Okay, half a concern about that then. But with this weather, high water table and all, Brendan.
Well,
Oh,
indeed,
we're
Vanessa,
ticking all
indeed.
the bingo boxes today, aren't we? Calex Filly, water table, the boy Cobden, bang, bang. It's happening. Wait for lessons to be learned in a minute. Right. Kev, let's crack on with the France action because, of course, we saw Hayezark win the Gannet, has been cut now for the Arc de Triomphe to 33-1. This was a pretty big price winner of the Gannet. Bit of a messy race. First top flight success for the trainer, I think it was. But of course, all our attention was on Al Riffer, the reappearance of him. So looking forward to seeing him. Finished in fourth in the end, but in that messy race, give us some tales from Longchamp. What was the feedback in regards to Al Riffer?
Yeah, she looked it like you saw. It was a messy, like you said, it was a messy race. It didn't pan out the way I think most expected it to. The without wishing to be disrespectful, the kind of the better horses got a bit separated from those up in the front end, and it got a little bit messy. Turned into a sprint. Thought Al Riffer was going to go and win there, but furlong down, he made really strong headway. And Dylan just said he just took a big blow about 100 yards out, and you can see that visually in how the final 100 yards went. And sure, look, you'd be delighted with the comeback. You always hope you can go and win when you travel like this. But bear in mind, it was his first run of the season, giving up race fitness to the rest of them. And yeah, I think everyone involved will come away really positive and will be really hopeful going forward that he can get back to winning ways in Group Ones. Take nothing away from the winner, what was in the right, the winner and the second were very much in the right spot. They were very much both stepping up in class. But look, they did their thing, and the rest couldn't run them down. And yeah, look, the ground was a little bit quicker. It goes into the form book, it's very soft, but it most definitely wasn't that. It was, I'd call it proper good ground in the straight, and just got on the easy side as you went down the track, backwards heading for the starting point. So
Yep.
those French going descriptions continue to be a little bit misleading, but they do give out the going stick readings, which were accurate to my boot, if you will. But
Your boot.
yeah.
And a very quick mention for American Sonia, because of course she did win her race over there, just the two taking over for the Joseph O'Brien team and did come back with the win for American Sonia. I know she's sort of already proven herself at that level, but Joseph afterwards seemed sort of as quietly confident as Joseph would be about her stepping up to Group One level at some point this season.
Yeah, I was impressed with her. Definitely a step up. I think time form have her improving 8 pounds. For her to do that on her first run of the season was brilliant. Got a beautiful, lovely, simple ride from Dylan. Gap opened up. She was quick enough to take it and put the race to bed very well. She'd run over 9 furlongs a few times. This was her first go at 10. And she will be on her travels. She ran really well out in Saratoga last season. I'd say she could be heading back in a similar direction again. And yeah, she'd be one of those. Look, she needs to drive on again to win a Group One or a Grade One. But I think she might be able to now. All of Joseph seems to be
Okay.
progressing from their first run. And I thought she was quite impressive there.
Okay, we give her a tick then. Do we give a tick to the chances, Brendan, of Charin winning a Group One at some point this season? And if he was to win a Group One, would it be in the lock-in? This is obviously off the back of him winning the Bet365 Mile at Sandown. He's really making hay whilst the sun shines this spring. But Group One company has availed him thus far. In a Group One, is it the Lockinge?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say probably because there has to be a good chance that Inspiron is looking out of our box at this weather and going, what are we doing here? I want to go to California again. I hate this rubbish. I
Yeah.
told you last year that I don't dig on the spring.
Well, FYI, Inspiral's actually saying what I am also saying, just saying.
Absolutely legitimate critique of this weather. So we don't know what's going to happen. But with Inspire, a big rock, obviously massive run the back end of last year. But Charion, he does seem to be improved, doesn't he? I know you have to be careful with early season form, but he was a highly consistent performer last year, just below the top level. Two impressive performances this year. His heart is in the right place. I saw him actually when I used to be a paddock judge. I saw him before the Irish Guineas last year. He's a gorgeous horse. He's not over big, but he's beautifully proportioned. So I do
the
hope
glory
he wins
days
a group.
For Brendan, the glory days.
Yeah, I do hope he wins a group one and someone takes a chance of it stood, which they might do already because he's race winning 2-year-old. He's shown consistency and durability. I'd say whoever gets him to take a chance at him at stud would have.
I'd say his owner Brendan has started standing stallions in France.
Okay.
And I'd say so. I'd say he'd be heavy odds on to end up there.
That's interesting. It's always a place for him at Colworth Grounds now that's happening over here. Right, let's move on to kind of news and views. And
quick one, if you don't mind, Vanessa. Two-year-old, Navin, Saturday. Camille Pissarro was impressed with him. I don't go to all the yearling sales, but I go to a fair few, and he was as nice a yearling as I saw last year. Great to see him again here, and first run back, bang. Really, really good. Was quite raw, good and strong late on. I'd be pretty sure we'll see him again before Ascot now, but keep him in your mind, because I'd say when we get to the third week in June at Ascot, I'd say this fellow will be lining up in wherever he does with a fair shout now. He was impressive.
Brendan, do you like Camille Pissarro's artwork, that sort of impressionist artwork of the early 1900s?
I didn't even know Pissarro was an impressionist. Monet and Manet grabbed the headlines in that game, as you well know, Vanessa. So we'd be sort of scraping the barrel of my ignorance here when it comes to painting, I must say.
Oh, I thought you were going to deliver us some line that you've got one hanging in your back. I feel like that would beat you. Right. Now we've done that sort of bridge from racing to topics is the disappointment in regards to the Masai Mara furore at Sandown, guys. Kev, I'll come to you for this one. Many of our viewers will have seen it by now, but of course, first race at Sandown on Saturday, big field handicap, messy start, and the starter lets them go. And Masai Mara is not just not facing the takes, but he's literally facing in completely the wrong direction. He was deemed a runner. He was actually Tony Calvin's weekend nap as well. Barry Orr was telling us that he was at Sandown on Saturday, and some of the on-course punters were so astounded that this was deemed a runner and that they couldn't get their money back. He saw one guy who was basically in a sort of very spicy argument with a bookmaker. I think the police had to be called in. Now, look, this is topical because, of course, we've got the rule change for the flat coming in this week where stewards will be able to deem horses non-runners as and when circumstances occur where they haven't had a fair shot at it. But it over jumps, nothing's changing. And this horse was deemed a runner, Kev. And you can understand why punters were left pretty peeved off, to be fair.
Yeah, look, it's just wrong, isn't it? You know, should not allow things like this to pan out like this and have this sort of conclusion. Look, human error happens. We all make mistakes. The field shouldn't have been left go. It was. The horse shouldn't have been considered a runner, but the rules of the men don't allow that. And if ever you had a lock stock example of why the rules should be changed, then look, they're clearly thinking this way. They're making the relevant rule change on the flat. I think they just need to copy and paste and change a few words and get the similar rule in there for the jumps to account for situations like this, because this was a mess, deeply unsatisfactory, bit embarrassing, really. I don't want to be the one that says it. It's Brendan's catchphrase, but hopefully things will change off the back of this unpleasant experience, and you'd have lots of sympathy for all involved with the horse, anyone that had a few quid on the horse, clearly. And just examples like this need to result in things changing. You might have a better phrase for what I'm trying to say, Brenda.
Yes, indeed. Lessons will be learned. I mean, I have some
full sympathy. Full house on the bingo card.
I have some sympathy for the authorities, because I know why they want to have these hard and fast rules. Because what happens if one day a horse whips around just as the starter drops the flags, and one set of stewards make one decision and the other don't? But I think that there should be some facility where if there's such cut and dry race where a horse has turned the wrong way around, but and the starter should have seen it. I know there are other runners. Maybe the starter couldn't see over the horse. That's a whole different can of worms. Is his ladder high enough? Can he go any higher under health and safety regulations? I don't know, Vanessa. We'll have to factor all this into the lessons. But basically, I think that the stewards, there should be an opportunity where I know it can lead to grey areas, but where it's so cut and dried like this and horses turned the wrong way around, you can just say to stewards, OK, we trust you to do the right thing here.
You'd hope so. You'd hope so. I mean, it just seems like such common sense, but as plenty of people have said in recent days, it shouldn't be as tricky as it seemingly is. Paul, I think it was Steve Drown had to come out of the stewards room and speak on ITV, do an interview with Ollie Bell. And, you know, he's got his hands tied. Like, what can he say or do? He understands the predicament. He understands it's ridiculous, but there literally isn't a rule there or a system in place for it to be any different. Yeah. So I did feel for him a little bit.
Yeah, and looking like Brendan says, like, you know, in cases like this that are so clear, you know, they're never going to be a problem if you change the rule. That's, you know, easy tick box exercise. The horse clearly wasn't given the chance to have a fair start, and you make him a non-runner. But it's like Brendan says, when you get the more marginal cases, that you run into trouble. But look, it's, do you want consistency or do you want common sense? You know, you can't have both generally, unfortunately. But in cases like this, shouldn't. You know, this is the extreme example that tells you, right, what we need to have provision for to prevent something like this panning out again. If it's marginal, you make your call and you stand over it, and not everyone will be happy, but that's where you end up. But clear-cut cases should be sorted out.
Yeah. Right, let's move into topics then. Brendan, what is going on in Ireland with the gambling regulation bill? Because there seemed to be a spicy debate this week in regards to this. This is, of course, the bill that is set to legislate for a ban on gambling advertising from 5:30 a.m. till 9 p.m. You've all heard it all by now. That would mean that Racing TV and Sky Sports Racing have said that such restrictions would obviously leave it not financially viable to broadcast Irish racing, be a disaster for Irish racing. And I don't really understand the mess that we're in with this currently, but the details of the debate I read that happened in the week just gone, it all sounded very spicy indeed. So expand, please, Brendan.
This is not easy, as you can imagine, Vanessa. The machinations of state are not my forte, but I talked to a woman who knows about it. So I think I might just about have it. I have to refer to my notes, though, because this is difficult. So the government wants to make amendments to this bill. These are specifically around the gambling regulatory authority being able to go in and take money out of accounts which they deem to be funded by illegal bookmaking. And also, there was a lot of talk when I thought everyone would be going, what about the horse racing? People were going, well, what about the GAA draw to raise money for the GAA club? So they're going to up it, that if it isn't 10 grand or more, they won't be, that these charity draws won't be limited by this advertising ban, right? So that's fine. So they went in to do that, but the debate didn't finish last week because the deputies didn't turn up on time. So they had to go back in again and effectively have the debate. These are the levels you're dealing with. Anyway, do away with governments, basically libertarian rule. Okay, right. So now on Wednesday, the report is down as report on final on the schedule. But there have been calls for Brown to recommit the bill in full, because if he only recommits it in part, then only amendments that were discussed at committee stages can be addressed. But if he recommits it in full, then hopefully our people will come in and say, well, what about the horse racing? But it looks like he doesn't want to recommit it in full. Right. So try and stay with me. So ultimately, it looks like Brown doesn't want to hear this. He's going to push it through. But bear in mind what the Taoiseach said, the leader of the country. If you wanted to have a little bit of hope, the Taoiseach said in the Dáil, and I quote, "I also do not want this bill to have unintended consequences for charities or areas like the horse racing industry. I would point out that I imagine there will be further amendments to come as this bill moves into the other house," the other house being the Senate, which I thought was just a rubber stamping facility for the bills, but maybe they can make objections. And finally, our people will step up and say, someone needs to clip James Brown's wings. He's lost his mind here. The horse race is such a valuable injury. So there is a bit of hope, but we're still odds against, if that makes any sense.
It does make sense, I appreciate
the explainer, Brendan. I like that. Thank you. Okay.
It's just very frustrating, this, isn't it? Like, Dick James Brown, like, gives every sign of being on just an absolute personal crusade with this, doesn't he? It seems completely immovable, and there's so many holes in it, you know, that, like you said, like, a lot of the objections weren't relating to horse racing at all. It was all the other stuff, you know, the local raffles and lotteries, and, you know, the fact that the national lottery is unaffected, like, makes zero sense. Political parties have been made exempt from these rules as well in terms of their fundraising efforts. Like, and that's before you even talk about all the unintended impacts on horse racing. Like, and there's a big question mark over the application of these laws to the online space, which is clearly, you know, in this day and age, the most important one. So I just think this is ill thought out. Like, maybe we're all guilty of not paying enough attention to it until it had progressed to a point. Maybe if we're all a little bit sharper and spotted this at the beginning, it might have been easier to get it rectified and make it make a bit more sense. Because there is an awful lot of good in it, there's no question, but there's an awful lot of holes in it too. So we'll see how it progresses, but it remains very concerning.
Remains concerning, with a glimmer of hope, courtesy of that little line Brendan just read out. A couple of other things to discuss before we wrap up. We'll go to the Jockey Club first, Kev. There was a piece in the Racing Post trade paper on Sunday in regards to the unrest at the Jockey Club currently. There's been lots of sort of negative rumours, murmuring about all sorts of different areas in and around the Jockey Club. But this piece was highlighting that the private members club, whose members are pretty unhappy, they're making their thoughts heard. They're unhappy about a variety of different things, about the shift of power being distributed sort of higher up at the Jockey Club, rather than at the smaller tracks. It sounds like smaller tracks can't make any decisions anymore. They're unhappy about not foreseeing the car crash that was this year's Cheltenham Festival. They're unhappy about employment decisions up at the higher end, the Jockey Club employing people who don't know enough about racing. Basically, there's loads of different sort of snippets in there, but there's overall unhappiness from, obviously, not, I should point out, not all the members of the Jockey Club, but some. And this has got out into the sort of wider public now, Kev. I guess, you know, I mean, it's a much bigger conversation, but do you feel that the Jockey Club are on the right course, the right direction, or do you think that this is going to serve as a point of change for them?
Ooh, well, I tell you, just the fact that this has got out there, this was Lee Mottershead wrote this, and clearly a lot of people were keen to talk to him. And, you know, the Jockey Club, by its nature, you know, I think it's an organisation that probably is happier to keep things within their own walls and sort them out that way. So the fact that this has been put out there, and there is a lot in it, there's a lot in it, a lot of quite spicy stuff. There is clearly an awful lot of strife there, a lot of disagreement, a lot of conflict, bit of a power struggle going on as well, clearly. And yeah, look, I'm not terribly well placed to give an insight beyond what I read here. But that the Jockey Club are hugely powerful. They're in charge of an awful lot of important race courses, and they play a hugely important role in the sport in Britain. So how this all pans out will be impactful. You know, from people that stay away from racing politics and only care about the racing, you know, there's clearly an awful lot going on there too. We're talking about upcoming changes to the Cheltenham Festival that are in the mix. The Grand National, of course, is all controlled from within these walls as well, to a great extent. So yeah, look, we want this organization to be steady. To be steady and to make the right decisions by racing. So reports of all this strife and conflict isn't positive. And normally when something like this happens, and a lot of this information gets put out in the public sphere, it can lead to some fair ramifications quite quickly. So we'll watch it with interest.
Okay. Still to be continued then on a few topics there to wrap up. Weighed in this week. I think we've rattled through plenty there. Brendan Duke, Kevin Blake, thank you very much as always. And finishing the show as we started it, with just a high level of excitement for the week to come. Punchestown, Guineas, City of Troy, Kentucky Derby. I'm off there tomorrow, guys. Off to America I go, living my best life. Just thought I'd get that in there. You know, that's why I'm wearing my Breeders' Cup top. just repping the brand.
Bingo, Full House.
Full house. Right, boys, thank you. Thank you very much, as always. Listeners and viewers out there, join us again on Thursday. I will be present. Barry Orr, before you freak out, I'll be there Thursday, don't worry. We'll be previewing, of course, all the Guineas action and so much more over the weekend. What a time to be alive. Have a good week, everyone. Join us again on Thursday. That was Wayne In.